military fears sky-high costs. Baghdad. Since U.S. forces ended their sprint up the Iraqi desert with a violent pass through her quiet Baghdad neighborhood, Dina Sarhan has begun a new life learning to make do. Since she can no longer climb stairs, she has restricted herself to coasting along the first floor rooms where her life changed suddenly in a moment of war. She's taken to sleeping in the dining room where the pink and white checked spread of her bed is out of place among the high-backed chairs and china cabinet. What the family and people who witnessed the fighting say was a fragment from a U.S. tank shell smashed through the front door on the night of April 10th and into Sarhan's left leg, leaving it a tangle of exposed muscle and bone. Doctors removed much of the leg. The amputation saved her life, leading Sarhan, 22, to write poems of thanks to her surgeons. But now she has been consigned to a wheelchair. Never a supporter of the U.S. invasion, Sarhan has nonetheless forgiven the anonymous soldiers who injured her in pursuit of an enemy adept at using civilians as cover. Now she wants help from the United States in finding a prosthetic leg. But she has been told during visits from U.S. military officials and an Army chaplain that none will be forthcoming. She said, "They told me, we don't have anything for you right now. It's up to a higher authority." The stub where her leg was still tingles from time to time. "I knew they would hurt us," she said. "Mr. Bush said this would be a clean war. Is this a clean war?" Sarhan is one of thousands of Iraqis who incarnate the collateral damage of that war described by the Bush administration as a means of liberating the country from Saddam Hussein. To many who lost livelihoods and limbs in the process, a U.S. reconstruction effort in its seventh week should be as much about recompense as restarting electrical grids, pumping stations, and a flattening economy. But U.S. officials have made it clear to Iraqis that they do not intend to conduct a complete accounting of war damages, nor compensate those who say the occupying army owes them. While sympathetic to individual hardships suffered as a result of war, U.S. officials say they are wary of beginning a legal process that could entail millions of claims against them. U.S. officials have approached the issue in much the way they did in Afghanistan, presenting Washington's multi-billion dollar commitment to rebuilding Iraq as compensation enough. But international relief organizations, including the Islamic Red Crescent Society, say the conventions of war hold the U.S. responsible for paying out such claims. "The other thing that makes this difficult is the endemic fraud that would creep into this," said John Kincannon, a spokesman for the Pentagon's Office of Reconstruction and Humanitarian Assistance, which is overseeing the civilian part of the post-war occupation. "How do you ascertain facts 3 months after the incident, for example? And once word gets out that the Americans are paying people for damages, where does it stop?" Groups of Iraqis gathered daily outside the palace compound being used by the U.S. occupation authority, clutching receipts, letters, and other personal appeals for help. They can be found lingering outside virtually any public event featuring a senior U.S. official. In most cases, they seek a few thousand dollars to get their lives running again. Like Abdul Karim Salman, however, most of them find no place to turn. "Karim's service station had been ruined in the war," reads the sign that hangs outside the rubble-lined lot where his garage once stood. Salman said he wrote the sign in English in the hopes that a U.S. official might happen by and take an interest in his case. Despite his objections, Iraqi military officials parked a truck carrying an anti-aircraft gun on his lot before the war. He returned after Baghdad fell to find his business in ruins, by all appearances the result of an airstrike that left neighboring buildings intact. Under a drizzling sky Friday, Salman said he needs $20,000 to rebuild his garage. Behind him, his 18 employees poured concrete and cleared debris, work financed by $4,000 drawn from his now exhausted savings. He has now appealed to family members for the rest after a fruitless visit to U.S. authorities seeking help. "They told me a committee was assessing this and I needed to go to the Sheraton Hotel," he said. "I arrived and asked a soldier about the committee, and he told me there is no such thing. Go to the Red Cross." I went to the Red Cross, and they said they had nothing to do with anything like this. What happened the night Sarhan was wounded on the palm-lined streets of Al-Qadra, a middle-class neighborhood in northwest Baghdad, remains unclear. But from the damage patterns on her street and testimony from survivors, it is possible to determine the outlines of the battle that cost Sarhan her leg. U.S. forces had taken control of Baghdad the day before, driving toward the heart of the city along major roads and thoroughfares. The Sarhan family had just spent 6 days at her grandfather's house on the far side of town, figuring it would be safer than in their four-story home. They returned on the morning of April 10th in the belief that the worst of the fighting had ended. However, though Hussein's government had collapsed, groups of Saddam's Fedayeen, a paramilitary force, were using the neighborhood as a staging area for attacks on the main artery. At 11:30 7:30 p.m., Sarhan and her family awoke to the sound of street fighting. Witnesses said Fedayeen forces have been firing on U.S. troops, passing on the highway, then fleeing back along Sarhan's street in retreat. U.S. forces were in pursuit. Sarhan's house stood directly in the crossfire. The family gathered downstairs as bullets and shrapnel struck the roof in the upper stories. Then a piece of shrapnel blasted through the front door just a few feet from where Sarhan stood with her brother-in-law, Francis Araha. The impact knocked her to the floor with her leg badly injured. It also blew two toes off Araha's right foot. Sarhan's hopes now rest with the Italian Red Cross, which operates a medical center and a collection of Green Army tents near downtown Baghdad. The ward was bustling Friday morning with recent victims, mostly children and adolescents, suffering burns and other injuries as the result of unexploded ordnance. Cosimo Preet, one of the 10 Italian doctors working at the center, examined Sarhan 2 days ago. He was trying to find her room on one of the agency's weekly charter flights for Milan, where she could be fitted for a leg. He flipped open a green folder on his desk, thick with papers, a waiting list. "There is a problem and a hope with her case," Preet said. "She is not dying, but you can see we have some very bad cases. But I am hoping for next week." And that's from the Chronicle. That's, of course, a story that actually is, I guess, it shows both sides of the issue, whereas other stories are not so happy. For instance, we have a story from the London Observer today, which is a good website to go to, by the way, London Observer. You can do it by going to The Guardian if you search on the Google, using the Google engine. On a website or on the internet, and I just put in Guardian and then go to international news. When you get to the Guardian, and it's the London Observer, ex-British minister Claire Short, international development secretary who resigned in the aftermath of war, is now accusing British Prime Minister Blair of a conscious hoax in order to justify a date chosen for the war in September that he privately agreed on with President Bush. And the story, if I can find it, is right down here. Let's see if I can find it. Let's see. There's a lot of criticism of Blair in the United Kingdom. That story I can't find right now, but that, in fact, is a summary of it. The latest news from AP is 3 U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq accident. You can judge for yourself the accuracy of the headline. This is an Associated Press story from yesterday midday, although it was the latest one on the AOL online news. 3 U.S. soldiers were killed and 6 more injured in a traffic accident in northern Iraq, the military said Saturday. The statement said the soldiers were part of a unit attached to the U.S. Army's 101st Airborne Division, and that the accident occurred on the road between the cities of Mosul and Tikrit. It said they were traveling in a light-medium tactical vehicle. The military said 2 of the soldiers died at the scene, and 1 died while undergoing treatment at the 21st Combat Support Hospital. The military said it gave no further details, adding that the names of the troops involved would be released after their families were notified and investigations underway. In a separate incident, 2 U.S. soldiers driving a supply vehicle on Friday morning struck and killed an Iraqi child who was crossing the road, the military said in a statement. The accident occurred 20 miles north of Talil in southern Iraq, the military said. So the soldiers called for a helicopter to evacuate the child who died before the aircraft arrived. Now, this happens after a week of killings of U.S. soldiers. There have been 7 or 8 soldiers killed in separate incidents, some of them snipers, some of them mines on the road. And of course, and the U.S. soldiers themselves killed 10, they shot 10 people, 3 youths dead and 7 injured at a wedding party on Wednesday, according to the Gannett News Service reprinted in the San Jose Mercury News on Thursday morning. A very grim story. And then they invaded the hospital, demanding the names of the people that they'd shot. And causing a lot of people to flee in terror, part of the U.S. occupation, which, of course, one would love the Santa Cruz City Council to say no to if they could ever get around to putting it on their agenda. But apparently, Scott Kennedy's too busy making snide comments to activists who want to save public space downtown and has forgotten his resolution to get U.S. troops out of Iraq. I haven't, however, and I'd like to see it returned. If you want it returned, give a call to 420-5020 and tell Mr. Kennedy, time to get back on track and get the city council going on that issue again. Other things happening around Iraq, pretty grim situation. 5,000 Shiites protested the British installation of a committee to rule Basra, demanding an elected committee, which they were promised. Looting, chronic water shortage, and power shortages continue. The original committee was disbanded May 24th in Basra because the original governing committee was found to contain many Saddam Hussein Baathists, or Baathists. Meanwhile, Blair has arrived to praise the British troops in Basra while they're adopting this kind of imperial conqueror role. I mean, it's quite clear what's going on there. Hi, you're in free radio.
Hi. I don't have much time, so I'll just make this quick. I'd like to hear your thoughts maybe on, A, the efficacy of another city council resolution that really won't matter much to the Bush administration and those that run the war, and secondly, why you would use that as an opportunity to take a cheap shot at somebody that you have a personal difference with. Thank you.
Sure. Well, I don't think it's a cheap shot to raise the expectations of a community in four separate occasions that there's going to be a resolution demanding the removal of Iraqi troops, of U.S. troops from Iraq. This is something that only Dennis Kucinich has called for on the national level that I've heard of, although there may have been some more Congress people calling for it. Even Representative Lee up in Berkeley hasn't called for it, but Kucinich has, and it seems to me the obvious answer. We made a mistake in invading Iraq. They made a mistake in invading Iraq. A big mistake. A criminal mistake. Obviously, it wasn't really a mistake. It was part of a plan that they were dedicated to. It has more to do with power politics than any other of the many bogus excuses they used. How does the city council figure into this? Well, I want to remind the caller that the city council's resolution many, many months ago opposing action in Iraq without a UN resolution resulted in many cities adopting those resolutions. Now, it's true, the cities do not control national government, and that's a good point the caller makes. But it's also true that it has an impact in encouraging people locally, in educating the community, and it also sends a message to Washington. I think it delayed their war considerably, that not just the cities' resolutions passed, of course, perhaps even more important, millions of people protested on the streets. Cheap shot? No. It's not a cheap shot to hold a city council member accountable for, I see links, hypocritical links between Kennedy's behavior of calling for the rights for Palestinians abroad, but ignoring the rights of poor Santa Cruzans here, in fact calling for the elimination of those rights, initiating legislation. But specifically around the Iraqi war issue, Kennedy intentionally delayed the Porter resolution, which came up at the small city hall the meeting that occurred at the town hall meeting. He delayed it for 2 weeks, insisting he wanted to work on it, and then he withdrew it. And we've had no such resolution. So I think I don't think it's a cheap shot. I think it's holding him accountable for I don't know if it's an act of cowardice or an act of some sort of political agenda. I don't know what it is. Here's a caller. Hi, you're on free radio. Try again, caller. Sorry, I got you a moment too late. But try again. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and the phone number to call is 427-3772. I'd be happy to talk further with that caller about why he considers it to be a cheap shot. I think it's a fully funded shot, frankly. As I said, we don't have a resolution because, for the same reason we don't have a meaningful police review board. Kennedy delayed both. He delayed one for 3 years, he delayed the other for 2 weeks, but then he withdrew his resolution rather than vote for Porter's. And it's just, you can say, well, you know, what difference does a city council resolution make? It's, you know, it has limited impact, but it is at least an attempt. For me, it's an attempt to do the right thing. And I think It's also to express the will of the community, as was rather resoundingly expressed in the first town hall meeting, which was again delayed month after month after month, because Riley didn't want to do it, until massive pressure, call-ins, and emails forced her to do it, I think, or pressed her to do it. So, if people have a different understanding, if Mayor Riley is listening to this show or one of her confidants and wishes to call and say, nah, the public had nothing to do with it, we decided to do it just because we thought it was a good idea, or has some explanation as to why they've refused to call for the U.S. troops to go out to lead Iraq and to stop this ruinous occupation, I'd love to hear it. And, of course, what we need as a peace movement is to get together and demand that that happen here locally and that it happen nationally. And, of course, you have to demand it of the national leaders, but you also have to demand it locally as well, and that the local leaders reflect the sentiment of the Santa Cruz community, just like we want FAR to represent us and not to represent, his pals in the Pentagon or, you know, his nervous political advisors who want him to keep funding the war in Colombia because he might be able to do some deals in some other way on the House floor. Speaking of which, by the way, FAR may be calling in on Thursday. My indefatigable guest host, Jeffrey Gale, has not promised but suggested that he's been able to reach FAR's press secretary in Washington. Thinks FAR will be able to call in on the show Thursday, coming up in 4 days. Between 6 and 8. So if people are interested in getting a question for Representative Farr, please leave it on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or leave it with me as an email. My email address, grab a pencil, is rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com, rnorse at hotmail.com. And, hey, I will put it to the good representative who's... was one of the, finally, after much pressure, one of the good votes in opposing the final military appropriation, but again, can't seem to get the words U.S. out of Iraq out of his mouth. It's become less fashionable, and you don't see those signs around town as much anymore. You don't see people doing protesting as much, although Peace Friday still goes on, and I got to admit I haven't been to it the last few weekends, for a while, but it's something that needs to be done. You can check out Peace Friday. It's every 5 o'clock. At the corner of Ocean and Water Streets. And check that out. Other news coming from around the Iraqi war that caught my interest. Washington Post article of May 30th talks about a new so-called Operation Phoenix, interestingly named, because Phoenix, of course, was, I think it was the assassination program in Vietnam. In the early 60s, if I'm not mistaken. But the War Department's name for a program of ending Iraqi self-determination, having U.S. technocrats appoint Iraqi assistants, called Operation Phoenix. Liberate Iraq. No, we're liberating the U.S.-appointed Iraqi bureaucrats, is I guess the new line. They did this in Basra after deciding the elected government was down the same hangout. And, of course, this flies in the face of promises from Washington and from... London to allow self-rule. Of course, there's been a lot of talk also about the hoax in the last week of the weapons of mass destruction, which, of course, have become a big joke, a rather sour joke in the mouth of the military. But Bush kind of strides on in a sunny manner, and Blair insists with great sincerity as he visits the British troops in Iraq, that, you're going to find those weapons of mass destruction. I mean, you certainly will. You just got to go up to Lockheed and look around. But, that's not apparently on their agenda. But it's a hoax. It's a hoax that there was certainly it was a hoax that there was an immediate need to go in and stop the use of chemical and biological weapons, which could be used at 45 minutes' notice. That was according to one statement. There's actually an interesting series of statements made by Bush and Blair and other U.S. State Department and Defense Department officials, which I think I'll read shortly. But in any case, the word hoax is now being publicly suggested by Representative Jane Harman. She's the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee. This is a Chronicle story from May 31st on page A14. though the blame is being shifted to, quote, intelligence briefings last October. And she's claiming that there certainly has been time to hide or move these weapons through the porous borders. That's the, of course, latest pretext, explanation, rationalization, what you will, the excuse, the cover story of the administration. But she does use the word hoax, and with reference to the claim of, she's wondering if it's a hoax. And, of course, it's being called a hoax by high-ranking British Parliament members who are demanding an investigation. I think they're going to get an investigation. It's been the same thing is happening in Denmark. Then there's the issue, you may remember, this actually hit the mainstream media, of Jessica Lynch, the so-called rescue of Jessica Lynch, the U.S. Marine, the female U.S. Marine who was so-called supposedly rescued from a hospital. This has exploded, of course, several weeks ago by international media and by Democracy Now!, but it just recently hit the mainstream media, I think yesterday or the day before, you know, that this was just, they didn't need to barge in, the hospital was open, they were trying to take care of her, they weren't trying to hold her prisoner, and then they were very abusive and even injured a few people in what they were doing, the U.S. military, and it was all a big press story, similar to their looking for Mr. Germ and Mrs. Anthrax and the Saddam Hussein playing cards, all these ploys to get the attention of the TV-watching American public to avoid the basic issue of a U.S. aggressive imperial force invading a country without any kind of UN sanction, without any kind of meaningful justification, in order to conquer that country and install its own regime. Half a world away, in the middle of a hostile series, surround a hostile series of governments and peoples in the area who don't want the U.S. there. And of course, now that they're there, they're not about to turn things over to the people who live there. We know that too. It's the clear the transition of the U.S. from kind of concealing its imperial role to revealing its imperial role and just saying, we don't give a shit. This is what we're doing. Of course, they're still kind of playing with these excuses, the weapons of mass destruction, liberate the Iraqis, Al-Qaeda is based in Iraq, all these pretexts which don't hold any water. The one that's being debunked this week, effectively, is the weapons of mass destruction stuff. Here's another story. U.S. military officials, London Observer again, rounded up former top Ba'athist police officials meeting secretly and regularly to the cheers of the regular police, who are now in new uniforms after many demands by the citizenry that they be given new uniforms to wear the old uniforms. And this is really a positive thing. It's appropriate to give, I guess, the U.S. administration over there credit, the U.S. regime credit, where credit is due. There's so much debt that I suppose it's appropriate to mention the credit, too, that they're trying to, of course, it's not really on behalf of the Iraqi people they're operating. It's simply they're maintaining the cover story that their objective is to eliminate the Hussein regime, and they get, I guess they can get some credit for that. So they stop these high police officials under the Saddam Hussein regime from meeting. Well, that's nice, but who else are they stopping from meeting, I guess, is the next question. And the answer is, so far, I haven't heard stories of them breaking up Shiite meetings as far as the meetings go, but when these people become powerful, or when they become when they are taking power and are meeting to reclaim power, isn't it simply a step to that? I mean, if you're breaking up meetings, you're breaking up meetings and arresting the people for the meetings. They also invaded a Palestinian mission in Iraq. That is to say, the Palestinian Authority, the diplomatic encampment, if you will, the diplomatic headquarters of the Palestinians. London Observer reports no guns have been turned in yet at police stations in Iraq, though there is a deadline, is 2 weeks off. All guns bigger than 7.62-millimeter Kalashnikov assault rifles are required. They allow no guns on the streets. This in a culture, according to the Observer story, where ingrained guns are a part of Iraqi culture. Even Hussein didn't touch that aspect of it, Saddam Hussein, and they're threatening house-to-house searches. And there's a little funny quote from a French citizen who said in a Baltimore Sun reprint, Bush is coming and we will watch him because he is so strong and so stupid, and that is a dangerous combination. And meanwhile, of course, the UN is barred from sending in its atomic inspectors to help investigate the looting at a nuclear energy site to address safety issues because of radiation sickness. And Rumsfeld's claimed this was a successful raid. This is the first U.S. attack of the war, the attack on this installation. This was contradicted by the lack of bodies found later, and of course they apparently didn't find any of the material either that they were looking for. And as I mentioned before, Danish parliamentary opposition is going after the Danish government, which supported the U.S. Iraqi invasion because of the weapons of mass destruction hoax. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. You mind if I change the subject a bit?
Please.
I was going to ask you if you had any more updates on the situation in New York where they've been having to defend artists' rights to sell their own work in public. And they've been, as protecting it under free speech.
Yeah, you're actually talking about the successful court victories of Robert Letterman, who was able to force the Giuliani and I guess now the Bloom regimes, both mayors of New York, to allow artists to display their wares without threat of arrest. And apparently, I haven't heard that that's changed, that was the court decision, that the artists have the right to display their artwork. I mean, you might not be able to sell your T-shirts if you're selling generic T-shirts of some kind, but if it's your artwork, you're allowed to do that. Unlike in Santa Cruz, where if you even have your artwork with you, you're likely to be harassed by the Santa Cruz police.
So locally it hasn't...
Well, this was a New York court decision apparently from the late 90s, and Letterman has suggested that people here take up the case that some able attorney or eager amateur or a bunch of people get together in a class action lawsuit. But so far, the artists and performers, you may remember they got together sort of to protest the move along, well, not even to protest, but to try to coax the city council into not having such big forbidden zones. The display devices are forbidden everywhere except, well, beyond 10 feet from buildings and all these other different obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
The street performers... There was a small change in the final city council decision in January that was less of a change than I thought they were going to do. They didn't keep it at the 6 feet that it has been since 94. You have to have be 6 feet from a building, 6 feet from a bench, et cetera. They moved it out to 10 feet, which essentially excludes more than 75% of the Pacific Avenue sidewalk and probably virtually all other sidewalks in the city, because there's very few sidewalks that are larger than further out than 10 feet from a building. But they also gave the street musicians two bones. They eliminated, they cut back on the number of things that are considered display devices. They eliminated a couple of words, though it's really ambiguous, and the police can make these choices. That's still the problem. And they also stated that if you're playing without a display device, and you're a street musician playing for, you know, playing benefits for money for donation, you can do that without regard to any of these forbidden zones. So that means if you don't have your guitar case out, you can stand next to a building and play. It means you can stand next to a street cafe and play.
Uh-huh.
They eliminated the thing that said non-commercial activity from the forbidden zone. So it means that you can also now distribute flyers in those places, where before, if you were distributing flyers, theoretically, you were amenable to arrest and a $162 fine. So this was a sort of a... It sounds like a major thing, and it is a significant thing for musicians to be able to do this. The trouble is, musicians use their guitar cases as, you know, collection devices for donations, and police have been interpreting this to mean that they are using display devices, which means both that they have to be 10 feet... and also that they have to move along every hour. And for the first time, as I perhaps didn't mention before in my talk about the protest that we had the other day, where we had a call into City Council at the Costa Brava Planner, they demanded that the Huff table move along. They demanded that, activists signing people up with voter registration forms and petitions could not be there for more than an hour.
That's outrageous.
It is very outrageous, and there are some activists who have declared they simply will not tolerate that they'll take a ticket or go to jail.
Do you know anything about, what about Michael Truth?
Yeah. I'm sorry, getting back to your question, which is, what about the street performers' right to display their merchandise?
Art. I'm an artist.
Yeah, sorry. You're right. I continue mistakenly use the word merchandise. It's art we're talking about. It's your craft. It's the product of what you yourself have created. True was going to, he was given tickets for that, as you know, about a year ago now, and he was going to take the case up legally, but as far as I know, he has not gotten too much further. He does have, I understand he's had good connection with the attorneys in Hawaii who are handling my case, which is the case that Baker, you know, when he took away my table in front of New Leaf Market and had me taken away, and he grabbed Zoe Einbinder and dragged her away screaming.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And I think you were a witness to that, actually. But no, I don't think True has gotten too much further, but if he has, hopefully he'll let us all know. I haven't heard anything from him, and I suspect I would have. If you give me a call off air, I can give you his number. I don't have it with me now. Call the Huffline if anybody else is interested in this. I'd love to see some performers getting together, because I'm continuing to hear increased complaints of harassment of street performers. Although it's very sporadic. You know, you'll see people playing, sitting on a bench, which is completely illegal. You can't play on a bench. It's public property. Or they'll be in front of a street cafe with a display device. That's completely illegal.
Yeah, well, I'm not just interested in music. I mean, I think that's important, too, to keep the whole flavor of the, you know, tourist town and all that. But I'm also interested in visual display, you know, because, you know, what's an artist to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, the last we heard, and of course, isn't really... you probably heard about the case of John Moorer and the Fuck the Police legend in his hat.
Through the emails, yeah.
He originally got a ticket for display of merchandise.
Outrageous.
Merchandise is what they're using to go after people who lay out their stuff on the street in any way, even if it's their personal art product, and show it. It's, again, largely in the hands of the police, and it has to do with their choices. And I'm sorry I don't have more information for you, but I guess the information is I've seen no real change on that.
Mm-hmm. And at current, you don't know of any particular lawyers that might be interested in the case?
Well, you know, I'm trying to round up a lawyer for this move-along, which is very outrageous, which, you know, the idea that, mm-hmm. that you have to move along every hour with your political table, which means, and you can't come back for 24 hours, and we're also, of course, trying to fight this fence and the destruction of the public space.
Mm-hmm.
And John Moorer just got a lawyer, Paul Sanford, to his credit, the guy who took the Camp Paradise case, the guy who took Amy and Cassandra's the right to have a banner on a freeway other than a flag overpass.
Mm-hmm.
And the attorneys who picked it up from him were successful in winning the Amy and Cassandra's case, and he fought through with the Camp Paradise case, and they lost it, of course, but it was a good fight. He's taken John Moorer's case, and they're going to be going into court to challenge, the idea that having a sign in your hat, which essentially is saying stop police harassment, which says fuck the police, is abusive and obscene language, and you're soliciting with it is not a credible idea, and it essentially provides a cover for police harassment, and that's what they're doing. They went after John Moorer a week ago and ticketed him for this, gave him a $162 ticket.
Yeah. Because they don't like what his clothing says.
Because they don't like what his clothing says, and, you know, it was also the second such citation. They gave him an earlier citation for soliciting with using abusive and profane language, because when a merchant came up to him and said, I don't want you around here, or can't you go do something else, can't you move along, the jeweler, a fellow from Dale Williams Jeweler, one of the workers there, he sort of made a little joke and talked to his hand, John Moorer did. He looked at his hand and said, do I hear some fucking person talking to me? Well, fuck him, or something like that. And it was a kind of, you might call it an adolescent, infantile, or emotional thing to do, but it wasn't challenging the guy to fight. He was expressing his dissatisfaction with the guy's coming up to him and telling him that he couldn't be in a public space.
And extremely rude, but not necessarily...
Right, and not linked to soliciting in any way. And instead, he got a ticket for soliciting with profane and abusive language for that incident. And he got a second such ticket for having that little sign in his hat. So you've got to say that the police the first ticket was a citizen's arrest. His first ticket was one that this citizen filled out. But the police didn't have to serve it on him, because as of the end of 2002, the legislature changed the law, which makes it essentially discretionary for police to take citizen's arrest, which I don't agree with. I think they should be mandatory. But the police made the decision to go along with this. So, in other words, the police can just take a report, and they can say, you know, we'll file it, we'll send it on to the DA, or you can call the DA's office, and we're taking a report. We're not going to do it for you. But they chose to do it. So... that's the answer to your questions, and I'm sorry the news isn't any better, but you know what they say, if you want good news, you got to go out and make it, Mr. Chalker. Any news on your chalking case? I understand that you've been having some more adventures as they demand more money from you for your criminal chalking art.
Well, actually, there has been apparently... the latest is Ed Fry, our attorney, told me that... he talked to city manager, and basically, because we were basically going to challenge it again, and he called him and said, you know, you shouldn't waste your time with these guys because they don't have any money, which is true. I'm, like, practically broke now, which is why I want to take my artwork out onto the street and sell it to whoever takes a look at it and says, hey, I want to buy that.
Let me ask you, caller, you're referring to, you were convicted in a court, as I recall, of a chalking on the sidewalk in front of the McPherson Center, and you were arrested. I think you were taken in handcuffs, weren't you? Becky Johnson, who was arrested for the same thing, was allowed to sit in the front of the squad car and not taken in handcuffs. You were both taken to a magistrate, right?
Yeah. You know what I heard, I've heard since then? That in the... In the novel by George Orwell, Down and Out in Paris and London, he talks about how they have these street artists who make pictures on the sidewalk and stuff with chalk, and that was like totally allowed, unless the artist started putting in communist political stuff, and then they you know would harass them.
Well, naturally.
Yeah.
But actually, I got a little...
But otherwise, it was you know...
It was okay.
All legal. And
you know, I interrupted, however, my own question, which is, you were convicted, you were sentenced to what you were given a $160 fine, which was converted to community service hours, is that right?
Right.
But then you were...
Yeah.
But then you were given a so-called restitution fee, which was how much? Or was it restitution, or was it...
Well, yeah, there was a thing with the there's a fee related to doing the community service. So at first the judge says $162 fine, or if you don't have the ability to pay, then you can take 23 hours community service. And but what they didn't tell me was that the court referral demands a $35 fee to process your community service. So it's really community service on top of a fee. And so I basically had to challenge that, and also the court's paperwork that they gave me said that there was a way to have a waiver of that fee for low income people, which I'm, you know, extremely low income, and so I thought, oh well, that's okay. But then when I got the court referral, they said, oh no, that's old paperwork. So I was given misinformation by the court. Eventually, it's like I cleared that up, and I'm just doing the community service just directly.
What was the concern that brought this matter to the city attorney's attention that you had to Was there an additional charge? I think they were
billed
you and Becky Johnson for the so-called cleanup costs.
Yeah, that was just recently. See what? Because the decision was back in October. Then we appealed it, and it was a case in March. After the case, I think in April or May, they sent us another bill for the cleanup, and that's what we recently had the issue.
Now the cleanup is, of course, we're talking about water soluble erasable chalk, which can be hosed away in a matter of moments, not quite seconds, but certainly moments.
Yeah, we're talking about hopscotch, the stuff that they sell down at the arts and crafts stores.
Palace Arts Stationery. Right?
Yeah, Palace Arts. They sell it over at Long's.
It's called Sidewalk Chalk, right?
Sidewalk Chalk, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what was the bill you got for this?
$162.
No, wait, that was the fine. What was the bill you got?
Oh, the bill was $100.
And so you were then challenging this bill, and Attorney Ed Fry called the city attorney and said, look, these guys haven't got any money, and what's the ultimate outcome?
Well, the city manager. Supposedly, he thinks they're going to drop it.
But right now, as of now, you owe not only $162, or I guess the community service, if you ever got that done, and in addition, $100 to a total, or $50 each to pay for this rather expensive hosers who hose the sidewalk. I got to get a job as a hoser, man.
Right.
Listen, thank you for calling in. Is there anything else? Any other questions you got?
That was the main thing. Because the whole art thing. You know, if they're gonna, keep people from displaying artwork on the sidewalk with chalk. I mean, this does not just apply to me. It's if the law were not selectively enforced against political activists, it applies to kids playing hopscotch. You know, that's why I fought it. And that's why the first thing I drew on the sidewalk was a hopscotch pattern, because this law is basically making hopscotch illegal in Santa Cruz.
Well, note that there was a chalk-in on May 25th. We're going to hear some more tape of it. And there's I got a couple of great photos of a spare change figure asking for spare change in chalk and so forth. So chalk art is not dead, and I encourage you to call me afterward. Anybody else is interested in getting information about the New York court decision, I'll try and get that to you.
Okay, thanks, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And time for a musical break.
I am a union woman, just as brave as I can be. I do not like the bosses, and the bosses don't like me. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO. I was raised in Kentucky, Kentucky born and bred. And when I joined the union, they called me Ocean Red. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO. When my husband asked the boss for a job, this is the words he said. Bill Jackson, I can't work you, sir. Your wife's Ocean Red. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO. If you want to join a union, step in and come along. We'll all be glad to have you. We're many thousands strong. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO. We'll be right back. then join the dear old CIO, also the Allied Navy. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO. The bosses ride their big fine white horse while we walk in the mud. Their flags, the old red, white, and blue, and ours is dipped in blood. Join the CIO, come and join the CIO.
Or the IWW, or whatever you want to do, but get together, organize, and stand up for your rights. Good message, old song, still contemporary. Think about it. 427-3772 is our line. We're open. 420-5020 is the mayor's line. They're close. Also call the Huff line and volunteer to help us. We're thinking of doing some more tabling down there, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or we want to work with callers like the last one who called in about the issue of being able to display his artwork without being arrested. The issue of chalking is a obviously absurd abuse. And then, of course, this most recent thing of move your political table along every hour or face a $160 fine for the first offense, and for the second one, up to a $1,000 fine, and it's either 6 months or a year in jail. I'm never sure which. As a maximum penalty, that's a misdemeanor. That's the move-along law, the one that Mike Rotkin assured us would not be used against political tablers because the police have more sense. Guess not, Mike. I'll have to give Mike a call. Mike has not returned my call asking for his input on the issue of the Costa Brava / Walnut Street planter. Still waiting for Councilmember Mike Rotkin to give a call on that issue. You can give a call again, 420-5020. You can call us here at 427-3772. Here's some more stuff from the streets.
All right, in a more serious vein, with us we have the Buckskin Buckaroo and former guitarist who's returned to kind of check things out, Cosmic Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi, I'm back in Santa Cruz, and it just looks like the majority of the movers and shakers in the community here support the sleeping ban and the ousting of street artists, and that's a sad thing for Santa Cruz. It's too bad.
And in street musicians as well?
Well, street artists, exactly, yeah. And those are the ones that are ousted along with people that, you know, those campers. And gypsies are, you know, and I shouldn't even use the word gypsies, just people that need to camp somewhere for the night and people that would like to do art out here because that's what they were made to do by God are being ousted and ostracized. And it's the majority of the movies of the community in Santa Cruz that is supporting that kind of activity enforced by policemen and politicians. So I know where the people in this community stand, and it's a sad thing that the majority is on that side of the scale.
That's hence you don't have your guitar with you tonight.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, when it's like that.
There's a lot of activity down here now. I mean, it's getting a little sparser now, but, boy, there were just mobs of people half an hour ago.
With the propensity for police harassment out here, it's just, I'm discouraged against even trying to make anything happen out here.
Even though we have a lot of chalking going on here, police walk by without...
And God bless the people that are actually willing to tough it out and try and make art happen out here. I'm tired of the police harassment. I don't want to...
Pop art, I guess. Yeah, I hear you, Chris.
Oh, I love the chalk on the sidewalk. I think that it should be illegal to stop people from using chalk on the sidewalk because it's pretty colors and it's neat. And it's interesting instead of just some gummy brick.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mike.
Jon Golder, you have, you know, the traditional Swedish mountain cap on along with your large cup of ale, apparently without any ale in the cup.
No, coffee in there.
Well, it's a large coffee cup, yes. It's a huge coffee cup. I would say it's like, you know, what, about a foot deep? It's pretty hefty.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Now,
not as deep as the doo-doo we're in here in this city, but...
Yes, and or as profound as... my own thinking on these matters, which I, you know, plumb at great depth, plumb that I am. So, what's the story? We haven't heard much from you. You've been struggling with your own economic problems, theft, mechanical breakdowns, all kinds of crap.
Yeah, that's it. That's it in a nutshell.
So how are you? You still maintain your usual equanimity here. Any hassles from the police?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had a very interesting encounter with with Ranger John Wallace. He's the ranger who tried to cite me at Its Beach for my dog off leash, and I was riding through Harvey West, not the park, but the industrial area, on Saturday, and my dog was on the sidewalk as usual, and I was on my bike in the street.
This was yesterday.
It was yesterday. And he pulls over and jumps out and was getting ready to write me a citation for having my dog off leash. And I got very, very upset and explained to him that it was unsafe for me to try and ride my bike with my dog on a leash, and that I trained my dog to go and walk on the sidewalk while I ride in the street. And there's no way I can do that, and I don't want my dog in the street, and it's illegal for me to ride on the sidewalk. So I posed a question to him. How do I safely ride on my bike and have my dog on a leash in the city? He had no answer. No answer whatsoever. I said, I have the right to protect my own safety. And that's my inalienable right under the Constitution to protect my life and liberty, and he said, well, we have to obey the laws. We have to obey the laws. It doesn't matter. I don't write the laws. So I said, okay, well, what about retractable leashes? I see all these retractable leashes. Now, isn't the law that a leash can't be over 6 feet? And he nods. I said, well, how come you're not writing tickets for people with retractable leashes? They can't stop their dog from lunging at you. Every retractable leash is breaking the law. And again, stone silence. Couldn't answer the question. So, It was a kind of angry, tight standoff, and he insisted on getting my driver's license. I almost totally refused because he has no right to see it when I'm on my bike. He wanted to run a check on me, a warrant check. I could have refused on that too, but I was curious myself.
I see. You got a warrant? You want to take me in?
Yeah. Well, in any case, I was clean, so. He let me go and didn't write me a ticket. I also questioned very hard about the time at Its Beach when he wrote that ticket and really had no reason to do so. And he tried to use the lame excuse that he'd given me two warnings before, a month previous or something like that. But
he didn't write your ticket.
In any case, no. We parted with some understanding. But it's very clear to me that the problem with the cops here is they don't understand our basic constitutional rights. They got their nose in the book on these little citations.
Wow. Now, any court dates coming up we should know about, or court dates last week that you want to tell me about?
I've got, a trial readiness date on the 29th. And
charges?
Well, this is the resisting arrest when they tried to take me in on this, as far as I'm concerned.
City manager hatchet number?
No, this is regarding this warrant that's not really a warrant issued by Mulligan. And then also, let's see, what else have I got? My small claims case for damages against these two cops got essentially tossed out of court because I didn't file a claim first. With the city, so I'll have to go that route.
The intricacies of dealing with city council and the courts. Thank you, Yon Golder.
Yeah, well, I did at least get to drag the cops away from their work for a while, so there's just that few hours less mischief they could accomplish.
And Yon will be throwing a legal forum, a kind of a trial legal forum, I want to remind you all, on June 10th. June 10th is coming up. That is, I guess, a Tuesday. Tuesday evening. It's also a city council evening, but it's before the city council. It is at 5:30 on the second floor of the main library downtown across from City Hall. And it runs from 5:30 to 7. Jan's going to be talking about using I think the Public Records Act, about how to fight an infraction, about how to deal with a police officer on the street, some variety of topics like that. It's going to be open to the public, particularly if you have questions yourself on how to deal with issues, tickets you may have gotten. Should be kind of interesting. And if you want to be in on the planning on this, we're going to be discussing it at the next HUF meeting on the 4th, on Wednesday, June 4th at 8:30 in the morning, if you can get up that early, Baker Square, free coffee for you if you can't afford it. And we have our usual HUF gang gathers there at 1107 Ocean Street. And now let's hear some more from the streets.
Okay, it's about noon, a little bit afternoon, in front of the public library on May 28th. Boy, it's a sunny Wednesday. We're talking with
Tim Ahern.
Tim, you saw the city council last night, and you were amused or edified, or you seemed pleasantly pleased by the whole thing,
educated.
Any comments on what you saw at oral communications?
I really like the fast-track ADU idea. They spent way too much time on it, but in terms of what you were saying, it just seems there's a pattern of police harassment that's going on here for everybody in every case. And if you don't drive a Mercedes and you're not a white American, you're not going to get a fair shake from these people.
How long have you been a resident of Santa Cruz?
I've been a resident this time for 7 years, and I lived here about 10 years ago as well.
And what kind of work do you do?
I work with disabled adults. I do vocational programs and supported living services. So I'm a nice guy.
You have a goatee, and you are wearing shorts.
And a no shirt. I had no shirt on either. And I have tattoos.
Show me your tattoo.
Little tattoo.
Ooh, they look foreign language. Is that some sort of terrorist code?
That's right. Yeah, that's Tau. Yeah.
The terror of Tau. This could be your new book. So the key question about last night's city council meeting, of course, is did you see the Fuck the Police t-shirt?
Yes, I did. Really liked the way you took it off. Really was disappointed with Emily Riley's response. Trying to cut you off, as you said very clearly, you were simply saying for the record what was read or what was written, what the word was. You're not directing it at them. You weren't being abusive or anything. They didn't let you finish, you know, and that wasn't right.
Now, you yourself had your own encounter.
For those who missed that particular council session, and it's always so nice to have some positive feedback after the negative feedback. I got a very, very negative letter from longtime listener Bob LaMonica, who in fact was calling for my official censure. I guess it's really kind of an honor by the mayor. But what I did was, of course, is I went to the mic and I talked about a number of issues with oral communications, and then I brought up the case of John Maurer, who I've talked about a number of times in the show and earlier actually in the program, the guy who got tickets harassed by police for sitting with his sort of stuff down the avenue, and he got a ticket for false tickets for soliciting. In this case, I talked about the last caller with, and then he got a ticket for this "fuck the pigs" parentheses police sign that was in his hat, and it's not necessarily the most articulate sign, or not the kind of sign that most of us would wear most of the time, but the fact that he has a right to wear it, and the fact that he gets a $160 ticket for it, to me, is a very dark sign. And so I went to city council, and I tried to talk about that. Emily Riley cut my mic off. She would not let me discuss it. I wasn't shouting, "fuck the police." I wasn't even addressing the police. I wasn't saying, "fuck the city council." I was simply explaining what had happened to this man, and she would not allow me to do that. This is a violation of the law on her part. She cannot censor the content of oral communications. I've talked about this before. Anyway, as a sort of a cap to this, I took off my shirt, and under it had another shirt that said, "fuck the police." And she then had the cameras turned away from me so they wouldn't see that shirt. But apparently a little bit of it got out on the video because this guy did see it. He was apparently, as you can hear, pleased. And he now goes on to talk about his own case.
Police force downtown, how long ago?
About an hour.
And you were engaging in criminal bicycling.
I was. I was riding about 2 miles an hour against traffic down Pacific Avenue.
Now, how much traffic was there? Was it pretty busy?
There was not a car within eyesight.
And what happened to you?
A woman officer flagged me to stop. She pushed her hands to the ground, indicating she wanted me to stop.
Light blue or dark blue?
Light blue. She was a community officer.
You know her name?
No, I didn't get her name. She's an older woman.
Was she chunky? Was she thin?
Yes, very heavy, kind of reddish hair. She says she's lived here her whole life, so she's a local person.
Okay.
I didn't recognize her. She asked me to slow down, which I very happily complied with and smiled and asked her if I could help her. She then asked me to see ID. And I asked her, was she going to write me a ticket or was there a problem that she needed to see my ID? And the argument we got into was whether or not I have to show her ID. And I told her unless she was preparing to write me a ticket, I was not going to show her any identification, at which time she took my bike. Excuse me, there was another officer with her, another woman walking together, who took my bicycle, moved it down the sidewalk, and they asked me to sit on the sidewalk, and they called for backup. Within literally a minute, which is not a long time, but within a minute, six other officers were there in dark
blue.
Two in dark blue and three in the light blue.
So there were a total of seven officers?
Seven now, around me, making sure that I'm taking my citation at this point, because I haven't given her the license yet. I haven't shown her my ID. So I...
You don't even have to give your license when you're citing.
He gave me PC. He wrote down for me, it's PC, Penal Code 146 is what he referred to. Mm-hmm. And I had him write it down for me so I can look at it myself.
Mm-hmm.
She finally said she was going to write me a citation, and then I gave her my ID. She wrote me the citation, and they proceeded to lecture me. I was asked whether or not I was on drugs. I was asked, was I working? Was I homeless? I was accused of being someone who's been seen on the street and yelled at by the police before, which is complete and utter nonsense. And the whole thing was just really demeaning and harassing. I sat there on the street as people walked by looking and watching, and some were amused, some were concerned, but people noticed what was going on.
And this all happened in front of Logos Bookstore?
Yeah, just right in front of Logos.
Did anybody speak out on the issue or say anything, or was it all kind of silent as these seven armed police officers?
Armed. All of them armed. That seems interesting, yeah. No one would interfere. There were some people who sort of seemed amused because I was taking it fairly lightly. I was trying not to be abusive or angry in any way.
How did you feel as this happened to you?
I felt very much like a victim of something very large, much larger than myself, that I didn't have any control over. And also very outraged because I feel as though I should. I feel that the police department should be down there cracking down on the heroin dealers, because we all know where they are, instead of bothering me on the street as I'm taking my day off from my work.
Have you ever gotten a bicycling ticket before?
I have not.
Have you ever done this criminal bicycling the wrong way on Pacific?
Actually, with the bicycle, I pretty much ride wherever I want, and I observe what I would consider safety considerations and common sense. If for some reason I have to go down a one-way street, I do it very carefully, but I will do it on the bicycle.
Common sense, I'm afraid, is no longer the rule in Santa Cruz. We have, in fact, a common leader, George Bush in Washington, Führer Bush, as some call him, and of course, locally, it's Rubber Stamp Riley, mm-hmm. who does what the city council staff,
yep.
which in this case amounts to the police department, the Parks and Rec,
yes.
and the Public Works, and the redevelopment.
Mm-hmm. This is what we're looking at. I mean, we need these people to get with it and realize what's going on. I mean, this has got to be a time for... I don't know if you went to the Imagine America thing. It was kind of...
Dennis Kucinich. How'd it go?
It went pretty well, I think. The woman who spoke had a very good point that I've always felt like when you're in Santa Cruz and you're having something like that, it's sort of like preaching to the choir. You've got a large population here of people who are sort of like-minded in that way.
Except City Council has declined to pass a resolution which Kucinich spoke on. Mm-hmm. He didn't speak on the resolution, but he said U.S. out of Iraq.
Right.
Now, he's one of the few that's actually said that. Even Barbara Lee, who voted against the military appropriation as of about a month ago, had not come out against... saying U.S. troops out of Iraq for some reason. Her staff said that to me when I called them. But Kucinich has, and Riley delayed repeatedly, and her council delayed repeatedly this issue, and finally when the resolutions were put forward by Porter and Kennedy, they withdrew them. So we have no resolution at the city council level saying U.S. out of Iraq. And without people standing up, I feel you're going to get the U.S. in Iran. See, that's the problem.
Yes, it's definitely an expanding model that we're looking at here. You know, this is not going to stop right here. Unless we change what's going on with the electorate, we're going to have a big problem with getting another Republican in the office or getting Bush back.
Riley was a schmoozer with Kucinich and the keynote.
She was trying to be, but it didn't work well. But I think what the important thing that I got out of it was... she said that the choir had to sing, basically. Everybody had to be singing together, and it makes some sense to me. It's sort of, I was having some dissidence with doing activism here, where it doesn't seem like it's very much needed, but the real point is that, yes, we have to all sort of sing together. We have to put the voices into one voice and bring it all up together, you know, in an organized way. So that sort of gave me an idea about what I'm doing, and I've been talking to people ever since, everybody I see, trying to organize something.
Well, the police are trying to get higher notes out of it. That's the idea. So you should disqualify Mulligan. That's the first thing you do on your bicycle ticket.
Okay.
He's the referee in the basement who rubber stamps these things for the police.
Okay.
Unless you disqualify him. You disqualify him by going to the window and quoting 170.6.
170.6.
California Code of Civil Procedure, 170.6, which allows you to make a peremptory challenge. And here's a pen for
you. Thank you.
And you write a letter and give it to the window, and you say,
right.
And your name again is?
Tim.
And I, Tim so-and-so, right, wish to disqualify referee Mulligan. I believe he's prejudiced under CCP 170.6. I have a right to do so, and I want this matter put in another court. And they will put it in the court of either Commissioner Joseph, right, Junk Justice Joseph, we call him,
right,
or Smooth Steve Siegel.
Ooh.
So we'll see what parents' prize. You can then give a call to Huff, 423-HUFF, which is, and let us know. We can maybe give you some tips on bicycle ticket defense, although they're going to, of course, cite the clear letter of the law, which no doubt will say it's a one-way street, blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless, you can do things like discovery. How many bicycle tickets did you issue today?
Right.
You can find out all kinds of useful, obnoxious information, which I think is maybe relevant to your defense and also educational for the community. Because I agree with Emily, we have to have a lot of singing done. Unfortunately, I don't think we want to sing with the Führer in this case. I think we want to sing in a chorus on the other side of the street.
Absolutely, Texas Uber Alice.
I'm talking about the local Führer.
Yeah, right.
And we all know that Bush is someone that's not held in high esteem here. But unfortunately, the politicians like Riley and Porter and Rotkin, these people on the city council, who allow the police to do what they're doing, they have essentially these Gestapo tactics.
Mm.
Do they need six officers because you don't want to show your ID and you have a right to do so?
Apparently.
No, they don't.
They don't. No. You're right. You're absolutely right. But we elected them somehow. I don't know how this all happens.
Well,
we've got to do something different next time. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate
speaking on the air on this. We're talking with a man with a sign. Need a little help. Thank you. Your name, sir?
Arnold Ray Wallace.
Arnold, you're leaning up against I guess it's a cement water box with an... Homeless people can't... Homeless people can't sit here railing around. This is where people feed every Sunday. And this is where Jason Pascal used to do his tarot reading. You may remember before Sergeant Baker had him deported. You've been kind of silently doing some panhandling here for the last few weeks.
Yes.
And you're seated on your own backpack, so you're not illegally seated on public property. You are more than 14 feet from a building, and yet a police officer spoke to you today?
Yes, he did.
And why was that?
He set my sign on the ground. It was illegal.
It was illegal to sit your sign on the ground?
Yes. Gave me a ticket for it.
He actually gave you a ticket?
Yes.
Did he warn you at first?
Yes, he did.
And did you then continue to do it, criminal that you are?
I knew he set the sign up for a minute because I thought he weren't around, yes. And then I set the sign up for a minute because I thought he snuck up behind me and set the sign on the ground. Well, I warned you not to set the sign on the ground, which I did. Then,
Maybe you should lean it against your shoe. Would that be appropriate? Since it's not on the ground, it's leaning against your shoe.
Yes, it would. Yes, I guess.
Now, who was the officer who gave you the ticket?
I don't know his name, but his name is on the ticket. Would you like to read it?
I would. So we're looking at your ticket here, address of 115 Coral Street, 9.10.030, public property, leaning sign, section J. I may have to look up that section, but I'm going to write it down. Pacific Avenue at Church Street, Officer Pawlak, P-A-W-L-A-K, 439, and this was given to you at 11:43, and it's now about 12:20. Did he have any other words with you of any sort?
No, sir, he didn't.
And, well, again, this is a $162 ticket. I suggest what you do is I don't know if you can beat it or not, but I suggest you disqualify referee Mulligan, and I've been giving instructions on that, and I'll tell you how to do that. You go to the window in the basement of the county building. Have you ever had a ticket here before?
No.
Yeah, you go, the county building's across the river. You go across the river to the county building, which is the five-story building.
Yeah, you know.
And you go to the basement of that window, the building. You present him with a note. You present one of the women, usually it's women who are at the window, with a note that says, I believe referee Mulligan, who's the guy who would normally hear your court case, Mulligan, as in Mulligan Stew.
And that seems to be a repetition of what was being said before. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. These are the closing minutes of Bathrop's Pier's Broadsides. Stay with us.
Tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed them all. When there was earth to flow or guns to bear, I was always there, right there on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream, with peace and glory ahead. Why should I standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Buddy, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Buddy, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell. Full of that Yankee doodly dumb. Half a million boots, went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a time? Khaki suits, gee, we look swell. Full of that Yankee doodly dum. Half a million boots, went slogging through hell. And I was the kid with the drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal, buddy, can you spare a dime?
Okay, we're talking to John Maurer, who is now seated in front of Jackson's Shoes.
Good people.
Who you have some good things to say about?
Yeah, I have good things to say about Jackson's Shoes. Yesterday I was bitching, moaning, and complaining, and she came out and talked to me like a human being, just like everybody should be talking to each other.
Candy Jackson?
Yes, it was.
Younger rather than the older?
Yeah. I haven't actually talked to her parents, but they're good people, I think. So
I get to chat with Candy all the time, but then she circulated this petition that made a lot of things for poor people illegal to do. So that was kind of the end of our relationship.
So that's you. This is me, so...
So I'm interested in your situation because I think that there are a couple things in this flyer that I wrote that I have to admit are probably in error, and I want to make some corrections. Now, in order to do that, I want you to kind of give me the history of your tickets, John. You've been, you know, you were a street vendor for Street Spirit many years ago. Then you were a worker in a, I guess, a couple of kiosks.
At a hot dog stand, yeah.
And then you got some lodging, and now you're homeless again. How long have you been homeless?
Month and a half now.
And this time in the month and a half you've racked up how many tickets?
Four.
And have you been doing well? Let's talk about the tickets. The first ticket you got was for
display of merchandise.
And what was that?
What do you mean display? What was I displaying?
Yeah.
I was displaying some trinkets, some junk, things that were found down on the beach.
And did you have a sign that said junk for sale?
No, I did not. I had no sign for the merchandise.
Did the police come up and warn you that you could not have that merchandise there?
They have in the past, yes.
And so you continue to do this in errant disregard of a police commentary?
Errant, I don't know. I was doing it for survival. I knew it was against law, and yes, I shouldn't have been doing it, but I still feel I have the right to survive. So
did anyone ever actually buy any of this stuff?
Yeah, I made $5 on the stuff. Not the day I got the tickets, though. No.
Did they buy it, or did they make donations for it?
No, they made donations. I'm sorry. Yes, right. They did give me a little more money than it was actually worth. I mean, right. But yeah, they knew what they were doing.
Okay, so you got a ticket from which officer?
I don't remember. I've gotten a few tickets from Wendy.
Wendy Bynes?
I guess that's her last name.
Oh, officer with blonde hair?
Somewhat nice looking one, the butch looking broad. Yeah.
So how long ago was this first ticket?
This was on the 21st.
On the 21st. Okay, today is, of course, the 28th. Then what happened?
Then later on in the day, I went 30 feet away from my property to open a door for a 92-year-old woman.
92 or 73? How old was this woman?
92.
How do you know this?
Because I know this woman. I've spoken with her. She's a friend of mine.
Have you done a warrant check on her?
I have not. I don't have the need to do so.
Let's keep going.
Yeah. So when I turned around to come back to my things, there was the short woman with long dark hair, I don't know her name, putting on some rubber gloves, getting ready to pick up my stuff and book them in, so I would have to go and get them. She said I was
getting unintended property.
Yes. Unintended property. And
near the Palomar Inn where you helped this woman in the door?
Yes, it was. It's about 30 feet away or a little more. I'm not exact sure, but
now when was this?
This was the 21st also.
Okay. And were you pretty much at the same place throughout all this? Had you moved your location?
I have been moving lately since I've been getting tickets because I've been misunderstanding the laws. I thought I had to move every time I got a ticket. But no, the reason you move is because there's a moving law.
There's a move-along law if you have a display device. I don't know if anything you have constitutes a display device.
It can hold things.
I see. So the bucket you have constitutes a display device?
I'm sorry?
Do you believe that is a display device?
Well, yeah. I mean, anything could be a display device. But it doesn't make it right, though.
It's a bucket, and I notice there's no sign on it other than... skateboarding footwear. So didn't you used to have a sign that said pennies on it?
Yes, I do, but I had removed it right now so that I can say the word fuck or anything else like that right now because that's how I talk. So
that brings us to, I think, the next ticket, your third ticket.
My second ticket.
Your second ticket. I'm sorry. I thought you got a ticket for display of merchandise, a ticket for unattended property, and now we're talking about another ticket?
I did not get a ticket for not display. I did not get a ticket for unattended property. They just were threatening to take it in.
So you didn't actually get a ticket for unattended property?
No, I did not get one for that.
Glad you're clarifying this, because there are numerous errors. My reputation is ruined, but we'll see what I can do to patch it up.
I don't think it could be any more ruined than it already is.
Thank you, John. That's reassuring. So the second ticket you got was for
verbally swearing.
This came when a Dell Williams employee or owner came out of the store, and you were sitting in front of the store, and he said to you...
He said, don't you have anything better to do?
What did you say?
I said, talk to the fucking hand. The fucking hand don't give a fuck. And that's when I stepped over the line and got a ticket.
Maybe you stepped over the line and maybe you didn't. Were you standing up threatening him?
I was not.
Were you challenging him to a fight?
I was not.
Were you drunk or intoxicated under the influence of drugs?
No.
Were you
inside his store? No, I was not inside his store.
You were in a public area and he then called the police. And did he make a citizen's arrest or was this something that a police officer filled out?
No, he made a citizen's complaint and the police officer went in there and had him sign it.
It is from him, so the police officer has the discretion to take it or not, and the police officer took it. Which cop took it?
It was a female.
Same two or a different one?
I think it was one of those two. I'm not exactly sure. I don't have my tickets here to verify it, so.
Baker's Angels or Butchie's Angels?
Something like that, yeah.
Gotcha. Sergeant Baker is the sergeant downtown often on the day shift here on the mall. So that was ticket number three. Ticket number two was, so we have one ticket for display of merchandise, and we have one ticket
for using profanity while panhandling.
Now, were you panhandling at the time when this man came up to you?
I did have my panhandling signs out, yes.
He approached you. You weren't panhandling him.
No, he came out of his store, a step or two out of his store to tell me this, to ask me if I had something better to do.
You just suggested that you might, if he has an employment opportunity, you're always available to do some work.
That slipped my mind. I didn't actually think...
Are you looking for work? Are you one of those homeless hobos?
I am homeless, and I've been homeless for about 15 years. I do work. I work good and hard. It's just I have other problems. That keep me from keeping a job for more than a certain amount of time or looking for work.
What are those problems?
Mental problems, emotional problems, and chemical imbalances, childhood upbringing, all the normal stuff.
What about drug abuse?
I've had problems with drugs, yes.
Are you currently intoxicated?
I am not.
Your eyes look kind of red, and I just wanted to see if...
But there's other reasons for red eyes. Pollen count is up right now because of the extra rain we've had this year.
I got you. Now, so you have allergies?
Allergies, yes.
Now, were you intoxicated at the time of any of these four tickets?
No.
Were you on any drugs?
None at all.
Were you pollen affected?
I'm sorry?
Were you pollen sensitive?
Yes, I was.
Now, so we're talking about the second ticket with the Dell Williams Jewelers. What about the third? What happened then?
Third ticket is for I did not move along after an hour.
And this was who told you to move along?
Just a minute. I'm looking up at the ticket right now. I do have the tickets now.
Looking through these yellow slips of paper, so much beloved of the Santa Cruz Police Department and the local merchants.
How much you got now, John?
I still got four.
What I'm saying is, were you warned and then later the same person came back and ticketed you?
I was told to move. I said no. And then they came and wrote me a ticket.
Did they tell you to move and then wait an hour and come back, or did they just tell you to move and write you a ticket?
They told me to move and gave me a ticket.
Have you been there for more than an hour?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't have a watch.
Now, what date was that?
That was the 22nd, I believe.
The day after the first two tickets.
Right.
Now, what about the most recent ticket? I guess that was...
Recent ticket. Using profanity while panhandling. They got me that for a sign that I had on my hat that said, fuck the pig, and then in parentheses, it said police.
Ooh. We just learned on off-tape commentary, which I wish we had on tape because it talks a lot about a possible disability liaison officer, you were saying, Jerry?
The feds tell me that every agency has to have a disabilities officer. And I think some of the disabled people that are being affected by these cleansing zones down here, need to ask for a leveling of the playing field, and I was just hearing that they'd reduced his misdemeanor down to a infraction.
I'm gonna try to do that anyway.
Well, try to do it. It seems like even infraction, because it's a cleansing zone and he's disabled, that he needs the help of the public defender's office.
Right.
Just to maintain his human rights in this homeless war zone, this cleansing zone they have going.
I'm talking with Jerry Henry, who's been doing some frontline stuff in the war himself, and has a case on appeal about the Aptos Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center harassment that he suffered. Your final ticket was, of course, a second ticket for soliciting with abusive language. This one, of course, is a bogus ticket completely, because it referred to the little sign you had in your hat, which you already described.
But I'm not sure if it's bogus. I don't know. I don't know the law enough to...
In my opinion, it's bogus. The reason I say that...
I think it needs an attorney.
So, you've been here... You're back here today in front of Jackson Shoes. You're here without a label on your bucket. You have your backpack with you. And how have you been doing it? Any response? I know we talked about you last night at City Council. Has anybody come up to you and talked to you about this issue?
This Mike has rented my tickets for use on the Internet. He has mentioned it.
Who paid you so he could scan them and put them into a story he's doing for santacruz.indymedia.org?
Actually, he didn't rent. He donated money to me for
We better call the police again. There's got to be something illegal going on here.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking with a woman with a sign here in front of Borders, leaning against her shoe.
But unfortunately, we're running out of time. We only have 6 minutes left in this show. Be coming back on Thursday from 6 to 8 in the evening, or you can catch us on the Huff line. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or come to the Huff meeting Wednesday morning, 8:30 in the morning, or maybe show up tomorrow at the Parks and Rec meeting, where I will be showing up with other people, hopefully to just say no to the attempt to eliminate more public space on the mall because they don't like the way the people look and what the people are doing. Or they don't like the possibility that they might do bad things. I don't want them to congregate in front of Walnut Street Planter, sitting on that planter near Costa Brava, the Pacific Trading Company, and Rosie McCann's. John Moore has gotten an attorney. Apparently Paul Sanford, as I mentioned, is taking his case. I had urged Paul to disqualify Mulligan, and I think he first thought Mulligan would be a good person to have, but I think he's decided that might be better not to have him in this case. Mulligan, I find to be just habitually biased in favor of the police and unwilling to consider meaningful constitutional arguments and not willing to advise people of their rights with any consistency. It's a problem with Mulligan. Still wanting to find out what happened to poor Joe Barker when he got arrested in Mulligan's court. I didn't think Mulligan had those kinds of powers regularly. If you aren't subject to an arrest, you are subject to having a public defender, and Mulligan doesn't really have the power to have a public defender appointed, and he's not in that position. We've also heard a challenge to Mulligan from Jon Golder, who we spoke to earlier on tape, who claimed that Mulligan really doesn't have the power to hear anything without the stipulation of both sides, and that for years the courts have been misusing him as a referee. That issue is a much broader one, which I don't know the validity of, although it's an interesting question. But certainly it's a good idea to disqualify Mulligan and send it to another court, though that, of course, is no guarantee that the commissioners, Joseph and Siegel, are going to be any better. It's interesting, because John Moore got two tickets for the same code section within 6 months. The wording of the code section states he really should be tried on the second citation as a misdemeanor, which means he has the right to a public defender in a jury trial, which frankly I think would be a better idea than simply trying to try this as an infraction. And I may encourage Paul to take other cases and look on the infractions and let the misdemeanor cases go to a more serious level. And of course that means they're going to drop the charge. They don't want to take this case to a jury. It's an obvious First Amendment issue, even if the judge tries to avoid the issue, as they're doing in the Ed Rosenthal case, which is coming up, I think, in 2 days or 3 days in San Francisco. The marijuana advocate who was deputized by Oakland to provide cannabis and then arrested by the feds, and he couldn't get into his trial, the fact that he was deputized by Oakland because the judge wouldn't allow the medical necessity defense. Similarly, they're likely to try to keep out information here in Santa Cruz trials, but I think this one is pretty obvious. So Should be an interesting case. It's coming up. If you see things happening on the streets that you think need to be reported, please do. Critical Mass had quite a brouhaha. Looks like the day before last Friday night. It's on the Indie Media website, and I encourage people to check it out. I'm going to try to do a tiny bit of reading from it, but I'm going to be having to leave the studio very, very shortly because of the run out of time. Let's see if I have anything I can very quickly read to you. If other commentators have not already read it, Vinny may have gotten to this. It's called Police Violence at Critical Mass, and let's see how it reads. So the article reads as follows. On May 30th, that's the day before yesterday, Friday, between 60 and 80 cyclists were peacefully riding down California Street when two motorcycle cops singled out a rider and cut off several other cyclists in the process. Bluebeard was pulled off his bike and chased across Bay Street to the top of Miri Lagoon. When another cyclist arrived, he was face down on the ground and badly injured. Whilst peacefully riding down California Street, there were at least five police around him, none of whom would allow us to see if he was all right. Meanwhile, the police tried to dismount at least three other cyclists, all of whom were doing nothing wrong. Radio Free Radio Santa Cruz and KZSC were called, and after much debate, an ambulance was paged to take Bluebeard to the hospital. Don't let the police stop Critical Mass. Show your support by coming next month. And some comments. In solidarity with the victim of state violence, the theme of the next mass ride is black hoodies and masks. The person assaulted and arrested at the last ride was singled out because he was dressed in all black and had his face covered with a bandana. Don't back down. And another person writes, I was in the California Street, Bay Street neighborhood when I saw the critical mass going through. I remember thinking, there's too many police here. There were police on motorcycles and several patrol cars. I noticed police cars also following breakaway cyclists down side streets. Even. Finally, another comment. How is the person who was injured doing? Did anyone interview him or get photos of the injuries, badge numbers, names, or license numbers of the cops who did this? And finally, Buffalo's critical mass drive was also attacked. Several were beaten and many were arrested. It's an odd coincidence that Buffalo just got more than $10 million for the local FBI in Homeland Security dollars. Odd, too, that critical mass bike rides were harassed in Akron, Ohio, Portland, Oregon, and San Francisco. Odd that critical mass rides have been going on very peaceably for more than 3 years, and suddenly there's a crackdown across the nation. Actually, there was a crackdown on the critical mass when the war broke out, but that's another story here in Santa Cruz. Odd, too, that critical mass in Santa Cruz, California had a similar instance of police violence. No, too, this all comes in the heels of the bike arrests and skirmish that happened in St. Louis at the Biodevastation Conference. But it's all just conjecture, and of course, we have no way of knowing whether John Ashcroft...